I thought it was a rebound. I definitely didn't see the ball go in.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. And today's Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast is also brought to you by Draft.com. Use the promo code LOFANTASY to get a free entry into a draft with your first deposit. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at redrock_bball. I am, of course, the lead fantasy analyst over at basketballmonster.com. We've got a lot to talk about in today's show. There were five games on Tuesday, so lots to talk about there. There are 12 games on Wednesday for us to get stuck into. So
let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. Just a quick reminder for you guys to go and check out the Locked On Podcast Network Twitter feed and Facebook page. If you go to Locked On NBA Net and follow us on Twitter and on Facebook, and you'll make sure you get access to all of the Locked On Podcast shows across the NBA network, so you can find out about either your favorite team or to find out what's going on with a player, a fantasy player on your team, and see anything specific, any specific info the guys hosting those podcasts can give you. So make sure you're checking out Locked On NBA Net on Facebook and on Twitter. Give those a like and a follow over there to get up to date with all of the Locked On podcasts. All of the Locked On Network podcasts. That's what I'm trying to say. Locked On Podcast Network podcast. That was a whole mouthful, but we're done with mouthfuls now. Let's talk monstrous line of the night. It is Devin Booker of the Phoenix Suns. 34 points for Booker, 5 rebounds, 7 assists with 2 triples, 3 steals, 9 of 17 from the field, and a whopping 14 of 15 from the free throw line. Booker has been fantastic this season. 22nd ranked player this year. A big step up from where he was last year. And he still averaged 22 points per game last year, but he was the 71st ranked player. And a big reason for that is efficiency. He has taken his field goal percentage up from 42% to almost 45%. He is hitting an extra 0.7 threes per game because those threes are going in now at 39%. His rebounds are up 1.4 per game. His assists are up almost 1 per game. His steals and blocks have held steady, but that increased efficiency, the increased threes, more rebounds, more assists has led to more scoring as well from Booker, an extra shot attempt per game, and that has vaulted him up to become a top 25 player. And in fact, over the last month, which is only 6 games for Booker considering he missed time with that groin injury, he is the 13th ranked player, averaging 31.5 points, which is obviously just a phenomenal effort. 31-5-5 with over 3 threes and 1.5 steals. He has exceeded my expectations this season. Recently, though, the efficiency has been down 42%, but that's okay. But he has been absolutely fantastic this season and putting up numbers continually. Big minutes, all the focus on him, huge usage. Really, really sensational stuff. And despite the fact that over that last 6 games, he's only shooting 42% from the field, he has a true shooting of 59%, so that's well above league average on a usage of a monster 36%. So he has been absolutely amazing this season. If you drafted him, you're able to get him relatively late. I think I was looking at him as a pick around pick 50, around that sort of zone, and it's worked out pretty well for you so far. I don't really see too much changing with Booker as the season progresses. Now, I've got to tell you about today's sponsor, and they're back with us again, the good people over at Draft. It is Draft Wednesdays here on the Locked On Podcast Network. And did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? Draft is a daily fantasy site that has snake drafts, so not salary cap. If you're in a draft contest, no one else can have the same players as you. So like your seasonal league drafting format transferred to daily fantasy. Draft is my new favorite fantasy site, and there's no more getting crushed by the pros on this. It's not just me. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft as well. You can't submit the multiple lineups in advance with computer programs. It's all down to what happens in that snake draft. You can play a real live NBA draft right now and be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players to Draft get a free entry in a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use my promo code, and that is LOFANTASY. That's right, you can play in a real money draft for free just by using my promo code LOFANTASY, but it gets even better. Draft is so sure that you'll love it that they're even offering Locked On Fantasy Basketball listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100. Search for Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come and play for free right now with the promo code LOFANTASY. go and do that and support the people who support this show. The waiver wire line of the night is Jeremy Lamb. Just sneaks under the qualification levels that I have. It's got to be 50% ownership on Yahoo. He's 48% at the moment. So he sneaks in. He had 16-1-5 in the Hornets. Absolute demolition of the Kings. 3 threes and 3 steals. 6 of 11 from the field. Didn't need to play big minutes. And in fact, he hasn't gone over 25 minutes in the past 5 games. But still a big performance from Lamb. He is the 97th ranked player over the season. In the last month, those numbers have been a bit down, 163rd, because those minutes have dropped 23 minutes a game over that last month. And a large portion, look, his other things are pretty similar to what he was doing earlier on, but his efficiency dropped off. So if you look at him over the last month, he's shooting 42%. Over the last 2 weeks, 49%. So if the efficiency comes back up, then his value retains even in those limited minutes. Now, for the time being, he is a fine guy to own in 12 teams, but I think if you own him and you honestly look at your roster, he's probably your worst guy. So in a lot of cases, it's going to be better to stream. Definitely in a 10-team league setting, it's going to be better to stream Lamb, but he can have these big opportunities. And if Batum or Kid Gilchrist happens to miss time, we know that he's going to put up numbers. Now, we're worried about Batum getting shut down and all that sort of bullshit. That's not happening. Yeah, Batum's fine. He's playing through this injury. The minutes are there. Everything's back to normal. So I don't have any concerns really with Batum unless something weird crops up later on. But for now, Lamb is a guy that can be owned, but I wouldn't consider him a must-own. I wouldn't be rushing out to grab him or anything like that. And if I own him, again, with an honest appreciation of your roster, he's probably the worst guy on it. And in a lot of cases, that means that he's the first to go when a hot pickup comes, an injury occurs, all that sort of stuff. Didn't think that the young gun of the night would be a two-way contract guy, but it is. It's CJ Williams of the LA Clippers, 18-2 with 3 threes and 2 steals. He did it on the back of 7 of 10 shooting and 1 of 2 from the line. CJ has been a definite surprise this season, starting way more games than I would have expected. And over the last 7 games, he's averaging 29 minutes per game and has just snuck in the top 150. The problem here is that CJ is a two-way guy. And his 45 days are rapidly approaching. If you don't know what a two-way contract is, those players are signed and they can spend 45 days with the NBA team. After that, they either have to be converted to a full contract or they go back to the G League for the remainder of the season. So he is fast approaching those 45 days. And with Austin Rivers likely back in the next game, we might not see too much more of CJ Williams unless they can clear a roster spot, whether that's by a trade or a release of someone like Bryce Johnson, which I can absolutely see happening. CJ is going to have limited value. He's more of a streamer. Like over those last 7 games, he is averaging almost a triple one, 13.9 steals and 1.1 blocks, but that's an unrealistic expectation for him to keep up, as is the 50% field goal percentage that he's had over that time. He's really just going to be a 20-team league guy who's got that 16-team stream value at the moment, and that's going to drop off pretty bloody quickly. I tell a man's not hot. Yes, Kristaps Porzingis is your dud of the night. And it's not a horrendous line from Kristaps, but on a night with only 5 games on, we're looking for duds of the night who are owned in over 70% of the leagues, and Porzingis is that guy. 13-9 with 2 blocks, but it was the field goal percentage that was really hurtful. 5 of 19 from the field, 3 of 4 from the line. Nothing we really need to talk about too much with Porzingis here. His numbers have dropped off recently, 82nd over the last 2 weeks and 38th over the last month when he was a comfortable top 15 guy to start the season. He's pushed back out to the 20th ranked guy. And I think 18 to 25 is a realistic range for him to finish this season. Not much to be concerned about. The Spurs was always going to be a hard matchup for him. We've seen it time and time again for Porzingis against the Spurs, and it happened again here. Nothing to get overly panicked about. He is just your dud of the night for tonight, and that's really about all there is for Kristaps Porzingis. Lots more to talk about. We're going to go through all of these games in more detail. We're going to preview a Monster Wednesday where there are 12 games on. But now it's time for me to answer a question from one of the listeners, one of you guys out there. And it's question time, as you can see that beautiful graphic up on the screen. Now, what is today's question and who does it come from? It comes from Alan Danzig, who's on Twitter at ToottTheFish. He says, what advice do you have for an American going to the Australian Open in a couple of weeks? And for those of you who don't know, Australian Open is tennis. I'll tell you one thing, Alan, I'm not sure where you're coming from in America, but it is going to be bloody hot. It is going to be ludicrously hot. The amount of times that there are days when the outside courts have to be called off because it's too hot, they're innumerable. That's why they've built that extra roof over the second court there so players can continue to play. The extreme heat policy is something that has been a real concern. Yeah, expect some days of over 40 degree temperature, which is 100, 101, 102 degrees in Fahrenheit. Make sure you got your sunscreen. Make sure you got your sunnies. Make sure you got a hat. The crowds will be out of control. Make sure you've got water. It's a very, very busy time in Melbourne in that precinct. You'll also have days when there's cricket happening at the MCG, which is right next door to where the Australian Open is. So there'll be extra crowds happening there. Hydration, sunscreen, hats, sunglasses. And I don't know if you've got your tickets already, but it's a great idea to, you know, get yourself a ticket on one of the covered courts. So you've got somewhere to go sit down if it gets too hot, but make sure you explore all the other courts, all the outer courts, Margaret Court Arena, Court 2, Court 3, out to Court 14 and 15. You can see many things happening out there. And of course, Centre Court, the main Rod Laver Arena, where you can check out, the matches of the day. I'm not sure if you're going day or night. In the daytime, you get to see way more tennis because there is more games going on, more matches going on those outside courts. During the night, we've just got the couple there going on Margaret Court and on Rod Laver. But I'm sure you'll enjoy it, Alan, if you are a tennis fan. But just beware, there is going to be some absolute roasting hot days. And it can get tough sitting out in the sun, though. So that's a good idea to make sure you've got one of those tickets for one of those indoor courts just for that type of scenario. All right, let's get into these games and talk about them in a bit more detail. There were five of them happening on Tuesday. The first one, the Portland Trailblazers and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Damian Lillard returned. He wasn't on a minutes restriction. He had 33 minutes, 25 and 6 with 6 triples, shot the ball well. Good to have him back. And of course, with him returning, Shabazz Napier went back to the bench and just turded it up. 14 minutes, 0 points, missed all 5 of his shots. I was debating it yesterday, say, hold on to him for one more game. See how it goes. See how they use him. Piss him off. He's gone. That's fine. It was going to be hard for him to maintain a consistent role. Or a large enough role. This is not going to be worth it, but on a 5-game slate, you could have got something, but you got absolutely nothing out of him here. Interestingly, Zach Collins was removed from the rotation. He only came in for the garbage time portion, along with Noah Vonleh and Jake Lehman, with Mo Harkless getting those back up 4 minutes and Evan Turner playing a ton at the three. Now, some of Turner's minutes were increased because he was matching up with LeBron James, and Terry Stotts thinks that he can go with him, but that's 2 strong games in a row for Evan. He had 15, 8, and 3 in 33 minutes, and he's a 14-team league ad. I think he's available in plenty of 14-teamers. It's saying he's owned in 8% of leagues. So he could be around, and if this is the rotation they're going to run with, you've got to look at him. If Yusuf Nurkic was dropped, you've got to add him back, of course. 23, 7, and 4 with 2 steals. That's 2 strong ones in a row. Yeah, the free throw percentage was abysmal, 3 of 7 from the line. But overall, he has looked much, much better. Still, the minutes aren't huge, but the numbers are fine. 19, 5, and 4 for CJ McCollum as well, where Al-Farouq Aminu, shockingly, didn't hit 5 threes. He went 1 of 5 from 3. 5 points, 9 rebounds. And this is why I don't consider him this must-own, guaranteed, top 100 sort of a player, because he just puts up turds. Yeah, at a much higher level than what you'd expect for someone who you could classify as a must-own player. The big story, I guess, though, is Cleveland and the return of Isaiah Thomas. He looked much better than I thought he'd be. Now, when he first walked onto the court, then when he first subbed in, I thought, has he got a bit of a limp here? Like, does he look right? But no, he was fine. He looked like he had decent explosion. He definitely got his shots up. 37% usage in 19 minutes, 17 points with 3 triples and 3 assists. And we can be 100% assured that he won't be able to maintain a 37% usage as we move forward. He will miss the Cavs game on Wednesday, and then he'll be back in the starting lineup for Saturday. He reckons he's ready to go full minutes. It's not going to be the case. We're going to be a few weeks away from that, and the Cavs have no real incentive to push him into big minutes now. So they've been rolling. I think it was where they won 16 or out of the last 18 or something along those lines. So they're fine. They're going to push him along pretty slowly. And as I detailed yesterday, pretty significantly in the Player Spotlight series, I don't expect him to be a top 15, top 13 guy that he was last year, but in that 20 to 30 range, and at minimum top 50, is where I think Thomas will be from now on. But it's really good to see him out there, and it's going to take time. It won't be as smooth as this over the next 5 to 6 games, or almost guaranteed it won't be as good as this, but he was strong here. LeBron
James.
24, 6 and 8, 4 steals and a block, so he was fine. While Kevin Love, only 26 minutes for Love, 19 and 7 with 4 triples, a steal and a block. So still productive, but took 7 shots. And this was the real concern with Love with the return of Thomas, is how his usage would go. Now, it's impossible to judge it based on one game and really half a game from Thomas, but the fact that he played 26 minutes and the fact that he had 7 shots, it's a level of concern, and that's something I was talking about quite a bit. The other thing that people, and I'm not making snap judgments off this, but it's when something you predicted would happen then happens, You go, oh, okay, well, let's just see how it goes. Now, the other thing that happened is Jay Crowder looked good. 17-2-3, two steals, a block, and four triples. And I had multiple people mention to me, oh, man, this is it. Jay Crowder's turning it around because he's playing with Isaiah Thomas. And that's a beautiful narrative. It's a great story. You're reunited at last. BFFs, you know, lots of ass slaps and hugs. And, oh, man, so good to have you back, IT. I don't think that we should be making that a judgment or assessment based on 19 minutes of Isaiah Thomas saying, well, all Jay Crowder needed was Thomas back. I don't think it's as simple as that. It's good signs. I'm not rushing to grab him based on this, and he looked really aggressive. He looked better. But what are you thinking? He was just sad because Isaiah Thomas wasn't playing? It doesn't seem to make a huge amount of sense that Crowder would all of a sudden just be reinvigorated to be, you know, this awesome player again because Thomas is there. Now, maybe he gets some sort of a boost. I'm not 100% buying into that, but I don't think we should be making definitive statements, much like I'm not making a definitive statement about Kevin Love's usage dropping with Thomas back for half a game, nor should we be making it that Jay Crowder is now going to be jumping up and being this top 70 guy just because Isaiah Thomas is back in the lineup. Wado played 18 minutes, 15 and 8. Nice numbers for Dwayne, but the minutes, yeah, we just have to watch how that's going to go now with Thomas back. Someone's going to lose out. It's going to be Jose, of course, but Wade might lose a couple. Calderon played 21 minutes, and I am not 100% sure, but I reckon I'm 60% sure that we never see Derrick Rose play for Cleveland again, unless there are injuries. He's currently injured, of course. But I'm not sure he's even in the rotation when Thomas comes back. Shout out to the people that I argued with that said that Thomas was going to come off the bench and Rose was going to lead them in the playoffs, and that's how they're going to win the title. So shout out to those, foolish people. Let's go on to the next game, the San Antonio Spurs and the New York Knicks. Kawhi, only 31 minutes, but 25, 8-4, four steals and three triples. Took a lot of shots, looked great. After the game, he said, oh, I'm probably going to be on a minutes restriction for the next month. Seems a lot. Played 31 minutes here. So if he's playing minimum 31 minutes for the next month, I'm not really concerned about a minutes limit. Because what's he going to play normally, 34? And Tony Parker, the same thing. Oh, I'm still on a minutes limit for the next month. Mate, you're playing 24 minutes. You played 24 minutes a game last season. So I don't really see him pushing up to too much. So while it's annoying to hear that sort of stuff, I think we're pretty good now with Kawhi. Now, he's unlikely to play tomorrow. Danny Green's unlikely to play tomorrow because he's dealing with that groin issue. Now, I think Green's going to miss some time here. Pop said that the treatment they'd been going through hadn't been working, so they'd look to probably sit him some games, but he'd wanted to talk with his scientists first, which made me laugh. So Green, yeah, his value had tanked anyway, but he's likely to miss some time. And then, of course, because it's a back-to-back, Manu, Tone Parker, and Powell all may sit out on Wednesday. Aldridge was great. It's good to see him put up this sort of numbers with Kawhi playing 31 minutes, 29-6 with a triple one for LaMarcus. Had his shot blocked by Porzingis, which was a weird thing on a fadeaway, which you just never see from Aldridge. But some good numbers there from him. Ginobili was also strong, 12-4-2. And an alley-oop pass went in for three, and the officials didn't count. And that was that quote at the start about Michael Beasley, who just grabbed the ball and decided to run off, claiming he didn't know that it went in, yet every other player on the court did. So shout out to you, Super Cool Bees. Powell had 11-8 in 27 minutes, continues to put up nice numbers. The shooting wasn't there, 2-9, but otherwise that would have been a great night from Powell. While Kyle Anderson played 28 minutes, had 1 point, but he had six boards, he had a steal and a block, and that's just what he does. We know what he does, we know where the value is that he brings. I don't think he's a 12-team league player, though. Good game from DeJounte Murray, two steals, two blocks. He can really bring it defensively. I'm really excited to see what he can do, or if he can ever develop a consistent shot, because the rebounding levels from him, the defensive numbers can be really, really sexy. On to the next. As for Beasley, 26 minutes, 18-9, a block, a three, playing a lot of three for this team, although the rotations for the Knicks were just out of control in this game. Just so much dumbness going on. But I think Beasley's a guy that you probably have to look to add in 12-team leagues, especially if you need some scoring punch. With Tim Hardaway's sideline, they're using him at the three because McDirt and Thomas are giving nothing, and Beasley can come in and be that guy. Over the last 2 weeks, in only 22 minutes a game, he's the 88th ranked player. He's 111th over the last month. That's pretty hard to deny. So I think that Beasley is a guy to own. Now, Frankie Ntilikina, just the 16 minutes, because Hornacek said after the game, oh, he's feeling a bit ill. Would have been great to know that beforehand, but that's apparently why he didn't play. The Knicks closed the game with Ramon Sessions and Jarrett Jack in the backcourt and Bill Hernangómez in the frontcourt with Beasley and Porzingis. It was a weird lineup for the Knicks. Koch he had a nice stat line, 2.6 rebounds, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. But I guess the concern we have here is Enes Kanter. And weirdly, he played 36 minutes on Christmas Day. He had a 30-20 game. And since then, 4 games since then, hasn't exceeded 25 minutes and has gone under 20 twice. He only had 17 minutes here. Still productive, 12-6 on 86% shooting. But Hornacek looks to be going in a different direction at center and running some of these smaller lineups. He had 2 minutes of Joakim Noah for God knows what reason. Closed with Hernan Gomez. Not panicking on Kanter, not dropping him. Maybe in an 8-team league I would. But I'm not dropping him yet, but it's definitely panic signs, and it's not one of those where I go, he's definitely going to bounce back. I'm like more leaning towards this is not looking good for Kanter. It's just weird timing after you go out there and just dominate and put up 36 and 22 or whatever he did and play 36 minutes. Then after that, it's like, well, you know what? That was a great game, but from now on, forget it. It's just a weird decision-making process, but basically that is the title of Jeff Hornacek's memoirs. Weird decision-making process. The Atlanta Hawks and the Phoenix Suns, shout out to Dennis Schroeder for securing the tank, securing the loss. This was an unbelievable choke job from the Hawks. Forget the fact that Kent Bazemore fouled Devin Booker on a three-point shot, whacked him in the head, and then he bounded down the court. All ball. Nah, mate, all head. To give the Suns the lead. But with 6 seconds left, Schroeder got the inbounds, let the ball roll, picked it up, and then drove for a layup, which then went in with 0.9 seconds left to leave the Hawks down by one. Just extraordinarily weird decision-making. Surely he takes a three, gets it to Bellinelli, does whatever. Ilyasova, I'm not even sure if those guys were on the court, but with 6 seconds left, you could have set up a three-point shot, get the tie, but no, he went for the two, and then tried to get the quick two, 0.9 seconds left, and then they didn't foul. So if you're trying to get the quick two and do the foul, foul. But hey, they got the loss. They moved themselves towards that number one pick. Bazemore had 20 points, 4 triples, 4 steals, 4 assists. Another big night despite the crap play at the end. And Ilyasova, 34 minutes, 21-9. I despise the fact that the Baptist John Collins only played 20 minutes. Now, he did have 4 fouls, so that's a factor. But 34 minutes out of Ilyasova, 27 minutes out of Miles Plumlee is egregiously bad. I think you still have to hold the Baptist. You know, 6-5, 2 steals and a block on 1-6 shooting. Like, if he goes 4-6 there, then we're talking about 12-5, 2 steals and a block, and that's got massive value. And he's normally way more efficient. It just is a frustrating scenario to see what's happening with his minutes at the moment. Schroeder ended up with 20, while the artist, formerly known as Torian Prince, had 9, 4, and 2 with a triple one and shot 2 of 14. Also missed a game-winning alley-oop at the end, thanks to Marquise Chris blocking a game-winning alley-oop, which is just a phenomenal effort from Chris, and I'll talk about him in a sec. Bellinelli had 16 in 21 minutes. He's providing great value, shooting really well, more of a streamer than a must-own. On to the Suns. We'll start with Chris. 34 minutes is his first game of over 30 minutes this season. Shows how bad he has been, but he has been much more impressive over the last week, 2 weeks maybe. 17-11, 3 threes, 3 assists, 2 steals, had 4 fouls, but stayed in the game, played big minutes. I think you got to add him. You have to own him, I think, in 12-team leagues now. You got to go and add him. Even in 10s, I would consider it. I've said so many times, I don't like him as an on-court player. I think he really struggles, but when he is out there, the stats will come. And he's actually turning around some of his on-court play, and shout out to him. That's fantastic. I never want people to fail. I want them to do as best. You know, I want everyone to be good, if that was possible. And if he can become good, then the stats are going to come. I can assure you of that. TJ Warren had 31-5 with a block. Him and Booker just carrying this team offensively. Tyson Chandler 3-10, while Len had 10-4. Really hard to own either of those guys in standard leagues. Isaiah Cannon, 0 points in 20 minutes, but had 6 assists, so that's interesting, but not enough for me to really care. While Tyler Ulis had 4, 4, and 5 and 2 steals. And of course, none of those guys are standard league players. Ulis is more of a 16-team league guy. The Charlotte Hornets and the Sacramento Kings. Kemba Walker, 12, 4, and 10, 30 minutes. But this game was just, it was such a massive, massive smashing that we didn't get to see big minutes out of many of the Hornets guys. Batum had 21, 4, and 4. So if everyone who criticizes him, you'd be pretty happy with that sort of response. He's available in some 12-team leagues and 10-team leagues, and I would definitely be adding him if he was around. John O'Brien chimed in with 16 points in 19 minutes. He's getting extra run with Cody Zeller out, and Marvin Williams continuing just to be fairly atrocious the majority of time, but nothing too exciting about O'Brien, more of an 18 to 20 team league player, while Frank the Tank had 12 in his 25 minutes. Onto the Kings. you're probably going to be stunned, and you're probably going to need to make sure you're sitting down or not driving next to a big truck, so you've got to be really careful concentrating. But the Kings used a different starting lineup today. It's amazing. I'm well aware of the amazement of that. In the last 10 games, they have trotted out 9 different starting lineups, including 4 consecutive games with different starting lineups. And it's not only that they change the starting lineup every game, is they change players' roles, they change players' minutes. Nothing makes sense. And then Dave Yeager wonders why they're terrible. Well, because you're a bad coach for a start. You've got a bad GM. You've got a bad owner. We've got great fans. But just consistently weird decision-making by this team at all times. And you can lose games while developing your players, but none of this stuff really makes any sense. Bogdan Bogdanovic started the last game, and he moved back to the bench in this one, of course, because De'Aaron Fox returned, and he played 33 minutes in his return from a partial quadricep tear, which is way more minutes than he was getting before the injury. Again, logic is something that these coaches often need to be reintroduced to, and it doesn't often happen. We also got a big Scalabissier game, 17 and 15 in 28 minutes for Scal. That's great, but does he start the next game? He started, he went to the bench for Kostakoufos, and he came back to start. It's his first big minute game in I don't even know how long. He was out of the rotation. He still can produce, but I wouldn't be going and grabbing him in 12-team leagues based on this, because there's no consistency. Zach Randolph had 24 and 10, but his recent production had been down. I don't think he's a must-own 12-team league guy. He's fine to own, but this is such a standard Zach Randolph game. 24 and 10 with nothing else. No assists, no threes, no steals, no blocks. Now, he's been a bit better in that regard this season, but I don't feel confident in him getting big minutes each game moving forward. As for Fox, 17, 3 and 4, really, really strong game. Probably one of his best games in the last month or so. Don't think that he is a must grab guy in 12 team leagues, but you know, 33 minutes a night, if that continues, which I'm almost assured that it won't, he would be useful in that scenario. Budrick Hield, another shit game, 6 points in 25 minutes, not a 12 teamer. While Willie Cauley-Stein, someone who had been consistent and getting 30 minutes a night, Yeager just said, consistency, I can't have any of that. We can't have consistency. We've got to keep everyone guessing when everyone else is just going, we know your shit. You're not making us guess at anything. We're going to smash you regardless. So 23 minutes for Will, 8, 8, and 4 with a block. Still good numbers, but the inconsistency just continues to be baffling. Vince Carter didn't play after he played 15 minutes in the last game. Nothing is predictable with this team, and it just infuriates the absolute shit out of me. And I know that I used infuriates wrong there. Memphis and the Clippers, the last game of the night. Jarrell Martin outplayed Jermichael Green again. Green played 22 minutes, had 12 and 6 with 3 steals, so good numbers, but Martin was the guy closing it out, 8 and 7 with 2 steals in 20 minutes, and those two guys I think are going to cut into each other's playing time, and that's going to make neither of them even close to 12 teamers. Wayne Seldon was revived. He played 14 minutes, 13 points, 4 rebounds, 2 triples, barely played in the second half apart from the last 3 minutes. The shooting guards on this team are pitiful. Andy Harrison, Ben McLemore, who doesn't even play anymore. Dylan Brooks has struggled, you know, quite a bit, although he was not bad in this one. So there is something there for Seldon, but he's going to be more of a 14 to 16 team league guy. Tyreke Evans and Marc Gasol both weren't great in this one, especially with their efficiency. Evans, yeah, really struggled from the free throw line. He went there 13 times and hit just 7 of them, and he was 5 of 13 from the field. So 18, 5, and 6 with 3 steals, but the efficiency was a real concern, while Gasol had 11, 5, and 5 in his 36 minutes. Always good to see Mario Chalmers get 25 minutes and Kobe Simmons just 3. You got to develop those young guys there, JB. On to the Clippers. Lou Williams continues to get it done. 33, 2, and 6, 53% shooting, 15 from 15 from the line. That is an absolute monster from Lou. Yeah, Austin Rivers will come back at some point, but I don't think it really impacts Lou too much, and he's a guy that, of course, you need to own. While Milos Teodosic, 13, 5, and 6, 3 threes and a block. What we've been waiting for is him to start to hit some threes. He's been at like 32% or 30% from the season. He was 38% in this one, and if they start going down, the assists will start to come up. The minutes are going to be fine. I think he's a must-own. I know he's been poor so far, but I think he's a must-own guy. Blake had 21, 6, and 8. DeAndre had 12 and 9, while Wes Johnson started with Rivers out. He had 2 and 3, really very, very little to see at all with Wesy Johnson. That wraps it up for all the action from Tuesday's game. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, look at the player spotlight, and then preview what we've got in the DFS world, and that is a massive, massive 12-game slate. And I will leave you with a song by Mayhew, and that is called Phantom Engineer. So I'll be back to talk DFS and the player spotlight. Let's get into the player spotlight. And today's player is Brook Lopez. Now, today, or for tomorrow's show, I'm going to be taking the player spotlight requests in the YouTube comments. So go and find the video on YouTube and request your player for tomorrow's show in the comments there. And that's how we'll do it for tomorrow's show. So make sure you are going across to YouTube and adding the player. YouTube player spotlight Thursday. It'll be, yeah, YouTube player spotlight Thursday. So leave your comment in today's show. Brook Lopez, a guy that I think we've all been disappointed with what he's done, surprised. You know, coming across to the Lakers, I was convinced that he was going to be their best player this season. They didn't have a draft pick to tank for. They could see what they could get out of him, you know, build up, help the younger players, have a solid veteran out there who can score, who can take some of the pressure off them, some of the defensive focus off them. But it has not worked out that way at all. He is averaging just 22 minutes per game and is outside the top 100. And that comes after four consecutive top 40 seasons from Brookie Lopez. He's averaging just 12.8 points with four rebounds and 1.2 threes. He's still giving you blocks, 1.6 per game, but his efficiency has dropped down. Last season, he had a true shooting of 58. He is down to 53 this season because he's shooting, instead of 35% from three, he's shooting under 30%. His field goals are down to 44, and his free throws have dropped 6% as well. The block numbers, as I said, they're still good. He's never going to be a big rebounder. I don't think that Brook Lopez is a must-own player in 10-team leagues. Now, he is questionable to return on Wednesday. Seems more likely that he'll be back on Friday along with Lonzo Ball, but he's cleared to go, cleared to practice. The problem is the Lakers don't have a practice until Thursday, so it seems unlikely that he will return on Wednesday, but I wouldn't be rushing to grab him. I definitely wouldn't be grabbing him in 10-team leagues, and I probably wouldn't be rushing to grab him in 12-team leagues. If Kyle Kuzma there, with Julius Randle playing well at center, with Larry Nance around as well, I just don't see him coming back and playing big minutes, Lopez. In the last six games before his injury, he played 19 minutes a game. 10 points, 3 rebounds, you know, 1.2 threes and blocks, and they're okay, but it's more streaming-type situations when you want to go and get those blocks or get those threes. Yeah, from him, I guess if we count those last six games, one of them was 11 minutes when he got injured. But prior to that, he'd been okay the previous, you know, six games, 15 points, 10 points, 11, 13, 14, and 8, with at least a block in all of those games, but not just really borderline. And I can say, yeah, limited upside, just, and I know that he's got great upside. He's got top 50 upside, but whether a player gets to that depends on if he's going to be played. And nothing about what the Lakers have done makes me think that he's going to come in and start playing 29 minutes a game. I just don't see Walton doing that. And that's what I think limits his upside. Not his ability to rack up those fantasy stats, the ability of Walton to actually play him that playing time. Now, whether they continue to stick with Julius Randle as the starting center, I doubt it, but they could. But I think we're going to see more Randle backup center, more Nance, more Kuzma in there. You're going to get bullshit Corey Brewer minutes also. They've got Ivica Zubac at some point to try and develop. Can they see what they got from Tom Bryant? There's so many different things that just make me say, I don't think it's a must-own. If you want to go and grab him in a 12-team league, sure, why not? Depends on who you drop, of course. If you added someone like Frank Kaminsky, I would drop Frank and grab Brook and see how that goes. If you've got Jermichael Green, yeah, fine. I'd happily do it. Get your blocks out of Brook. Get some nice block numbers and some threes to go along with it. That's okay. But depending on who you're dropping, I wouldn't be considering Brook a must-own guy despite his pedigree, because the pedigree's fine. You just have to have that opportunity to play. And it's not like the situation before his injury was negative in terms of, oh, well, he didn't play because he was returning from an injury or because this other guy was in front of him. He had the opportunity. He just they just didn't want to use him. And I don't really see too much changing when he returns. Of course, that could be all wrong. If he comes back and plays 25 minutes in the first game, I would be all over it. But I just, you know, reading between the lines, I just don't really see it happening. In Los Angeles, the perfect DFS lineup from Tuesday on FanDuel, Kemba Walker 37.8 and De'Aaron Fox 26.6. Bayes had 36.6 and Devin Booker had 51.5. LeBron James 55.2 and Kawhi Leonard 49.6. Marquise Chris 38.7 while Scal Labissiere 33. Yusuf Nurkic 43.4 and that rounds it out to 372.4 and that cost $60,000. On DraftKings, Lou Williams 41, Evan Turner 31.5, Kawhi 49, Chris 41.25, Labissiere 36.25, Devin Booker 53.75, Aldridge 44, and Yusuf Nurkic 41.75 for a total of 338.5, and that cost $49,300. All right, 12-game Wednesday. Let's bang through these blokes and see how much value we can extract out of this slate. The first game, the Knicks and the Wizards. The Wizards are favored by 8.5. The Knicks, of course, coming off a back-to-back. The total here is 210. We need to check on the status. Well, we don't really, but we should, of rugged Ronnie Baker, who is dealing with that left orbital fracture after Anthony Davis smacked him in the eye. He's not impacting DFS in any situation. John Wall, 9,500. Big minutes in his last game, 41 minutes, 54 points. He has done extraordinarily well against the Knicks in the past. It's a good matchup. I'm in on Wall. The price scares me off a little bit on FanDuel, but this has definitely got 55-point upside, and he's probably got close to a 40-point floor, maybe a 45-point floor, which makes him a very, very good play here. If the shots fall, we could even go to 60 here for Johnny. He hasn't hit 60 at all this season, so he's been a little bit down in that regard, but I think this is a good spot for him. Jarrett Jack, Frankie Ntilikina, Ramon Sessions, Tomas Satoransky, none of those guys have any real appeal to me at all. Jack is priced probably a little bit too high at 4,700, but in saying that, the dude's averaging 27 across his last three games. I just have very little faith that he will come out and do that consistently. At shooting guard, Bradley Beal, and I mistakenly left Bradley Beal off the list of players who I thought would become first-time All-Stars. I think that he is another one of those guys in that list of seven guys that I gave in yesterday's show. Was it yesterday or the day before? I think it was 2 days ago. I think that Beal can be one of those first-time All-Star players. He's at 8,400, so very, very expensive. He had 67 in the last game, so obviously, yeah, playing pretty well and has been much better since Johnny Wall returned. A good matchup for him, but I'd probably look at him as more of a tournament guy. With a variable floor, but a really high ceiling. He's had higher scoring games than Wall this season. There are no shooting guards on the Knicks. For small forward, Otto Porter's at 6,900. You know, poor game in his last one, but it had been really good before that. I think he's got limited upside, but he's not a bad cash option here. Really has struggled against the Knicks in the past, but I'm not looking too much into that. I don't think there's too much to be concerned about there. While Courtney Lee's at 5,700, that's a cash lock with limited upside. Oubre's at 47, no interest. McDirt and Thomas, yeah, you know the answer. Kristaps, 9,200. Much like the Spurs, Porzingis has struggled against the Wizards in the past. No real reason for that. It's not like Markieff Morris is this great Porzingis defender, but he has struggled in the past. He's an expensive price guy with a low floor, so therefore that makes him a tournament guy, and I don't really feel confident about him even as a guy that, with 12 games on, he's not going to be the first guy I go for. Markieff's at 48. He'd be an interesting tournament guy, but again, I don't think the upside is high enough. Whereas Mick Beasley at 5,300, he's been putting up numbers consistently, averaging 30 across his last five. I think you can actually consider him a cash guy and does have some tournament value there too. While Mike Scott is obviously a tournament guy who we know gets red hot. He's at less than 4,000, 3,900. That is really good upside value in a multi-tournament lineup setting. At center, Cock, 4,200, Gortat, 4,100, Enes Kanter, 59, and Jan Mahinmi at minimum 35. I don't really like any of those guys. I'm going to take one. It'd be Gortat as a tournament guy if they decide to run him 27 minutes because Cock and Kanter are out there, you know, really absorbing all the minutes. Then he could easily have that double-double and get to 30. I have no confidence in it, though, but he would be a tournament guy, and none of the other guys really appeal to me in any strong level. Let's go to DraftKings and see how it all looks. I really like John Wall a lot here on DraftKings. At 8,700, I think he is a strong play. While Kristaps is a much better play on DraftKings at 8,200. Now, I still wouldn't lock him in, I wouldn't be looking at him as this awesome cash play, but I think he's obviously a much better player. And I love Brad Beal at 7,700 as well. That's a great price for Beal. He is a cash guy with that tournament upside. Courtney Lee is a lock for cash at 52, and Otto Porter, probably not as strong on FanDuel just because that price is a bit too high on DraftKings. Marcin Gortat also too high to really consider, have too much upside. 4,700 is just too high considering how piss poor he has been the majority of this season. It takes away so much of his ceiling at that price. The Houston Rockets and the Orlando Magic. The Rockets are favored by 7.5. The total is 221 points here. We know that Jim Harden is out for this one. John Isaac will be out for the Magic. At point guard, Chrissy Paul is at 9,900. FanDuel's gone, right, you think you're going to use Chris Paul? Get stuffed. You're not. They've bumped him by $1,000. That's still got value. I still think he can exceed 50, but it definitely takes away a lot of my reliability in him. Now, without Harden, he's going to have to do a ton, and I feel decently confident that he can get at least 45 here, so that would make him a pretty strong tournament guy. And you could also lean on him in cash, especially with the tight pricing on FanDuel, but that increase in salary does make it a tough one. We also know it's a brilliant, brilliant matchup for point guards going up against the Magic, and that obviously works in Chris Paul's favor. He has struggled against him in the past. I don't really consider that to be too much of a problem here. Lord Alfred Payton has been putting up good numbers, but not at that price. $8,000 is just not of interest to me. Chris Paul defense could be a concern on him. That's just way too high for me for Alfred. And he's been good, but he's not that good. Eric Gordon also, they've bumped him, 6,600. I still think that he, given the extra role, responsibility, ball handling, creation, getting to the line, all that stuff that he will now absorb in a brilliant matchup for him, is fantastic at 6,600. Really like him for cash and for tournaments, while Fournier at 63. Spend the extra 300 on Gordo. That is the way that I'd be looking at. Small forward, he got PJ Tucker at 4,000. Now, he could, you know, take on some extra minutes in Harden's absence. He just does as little as anybody in terms of fantasy numbers, so I don't care for him. While Gerald Green is at 4,000, of course you want nothing to do with him in cash, but he can go out there, knock down 6, 7, 8 threes, and put up 25 to 30 fantasy points and really bring home some nice value on this slate. So he is a tournament option. We don't know if he's going to be getting most of those minutes or if Bronte Weber's going to be getting them. It really depends on how they use Eric Gordon, but Green is an option here. John Simmons at 6,400, not no interest, way too expensive for a guy that has been struggling as much as he has. While Trevor Ariza at 6,000, I'm in on that. He will absorb some more usage. He'll take some more minutes as well, especially with Green now being having to play more at the 2 rather than at the 3, which is where he was playing and spelling Ariza a little bit there. Hazonia and Awundu, we don't care about. At power forward, as Gordon, $8,000. His usage is up playing with Vucevic out. I like him here as almost like a 35 to 36 point floor guy and obviously a 50 to 60 point upside. So cash and tournaments, while Ryan Anderson, I just no interest at all. At center, Clint Capella, 7,700 for Clint. Bismack Biyombo is a little bit of a different matchup than what you'd see with Nick Vucevic. I don't feel great about Capella at that price. I know he can have some big games. I don't feel super confident about him here in this matchup. While Biyombo up to 6,700. Now, he's been really good, averaging 36 over the last three, but that is probably just a little bit high for me to have confidence in Biyombo. He's at grabbing rebounds. He's blocking shots, but I don't have very much faith in his floor. Over on DraftKings, Paul at 9,600, very similar to, as I said, on FanDuel. There is some upside there to get to 60, 55. You could lean towards cash, but I think he's more tournament. Aaron Gordon at 78 is a great cash play and tournament. Well, Biyombo, this is a much better spot. 5,600, I love that for cash for Bismack, one of the better DraftKings plays out there. And if I'd also consider John Simmons at 55, but only in a tournament. He can go off. Most times he doesn't. And I was checking this today that John Simmons has a worse, checking versus the Spurs, his box score plus minus is worse than every single Spurs player except for one, and his PER is worse than, I think 10 Spurs players. Just something crazy like that. Consider, like, I just don't think he's very good. I think he gets overrated by a lot of people, and I'm not one of those. But yeah, he does have some upside at that sort of price. Of course, Eric Gordon at 6,800, a much higher price on DraftKings as opposed to FanDuel. Still some upside, but I'd go more tournaments with him rather than the cash option that I was seeing for him on FanDuel. The San Antonio Spurs and the Philadelphia 76ers, no spread because who knows what's going on. Joel Embiid is doubtful. And then you've got Kawhi, who's unlikely to play. Dan Green's unlikely to play. And then you've got the three oldies, Manu, Tone Parker, Pau Gasol. I've marked them all as questionable over on Basketball Monster because they've got a habit of sitting out these back-to-backs. I'd be stunned if all of them played. I think you see two to three of those guys sit. In fact, I think nearly everyone sits in this one, so it's going to be a shit show in general. Using cash options on the Spurs side of things is going to be real tough. There are going to be some options open up perhaps, but Bryn Forbes has hardly been consistent. Brandon Paul, Joffrey Laverne, Davis Bertans. Maybe I'd consider Laverne as an option, and we'll get to him in a sec, but it's going to be a shit show. Point guards, let's just focus on a lot of the Sixers. Actually, DeJounte Murray at minimum salary, absolutely interested in him. I think that with Green unlikely to play, that pushes Pat Mills to the two a little bit more, and that gives Murray maybe 23 to 24 minutes regardless of Parker's status, and he could push to 30 minutes, and really with his defensive upside in FanDuel scoring at minimum salary, he had 25 today in 14 minutes. He can really smash through. So he's a guy that I would be paying attention to. Parker, no. Mills, not really. Jared Bayless, no. TJ McConnell at 4,600. He has been really impressive, averaging 27 over the last five, excluding his last game, which is poor. But I think he's worth a tournament look despite the negative matchup that there is for point guards against the Spurs. At shooting guard, Redick's at 5,400. I feel good about his floor. I think it's a solid floor here, especially if Embiid is out. Well, Ginobili, I don't think we need to worry about him playing. Forbesy and Brandon Paul, both minimum salary guys. I would only look to tournaments with them. And if I'm taking a minimum guy, it's going to be DeJounte. At small forward, Kyle Anderson's at 4,900. Can he handle big minutes coming back from his own knee injury? He's at 4,900. So I think if we see that Kawhi and Green are out and there's no word of any restriction on Kyle, I think that he is worth a look as a guy to play. But Pop could easily just play him a half. So it'd be tough to use him in cash. He's going to be more of a tournament guy. While Covington at 6,100, I'm not feeling that great about what he's doing at the moment. At power forward, Amir Johnson at 3,600 will likely start in place of Joel Embiid. At 3,600, I think that for cash, you could almost lock in an 18 to 24 point performance, which is really, really good value for him at that price. While Benny Simmons is at 8,600, he bounced back with 54 in the last game. Definitely happy to go with him, but I'm not going for cash just because the Spurs could provide a problem for him. But he's got that 55-point upside, which makes him a tournament guy, of course. Dario Saric is now up to $7,000 because the dude's averaging 43 over his last three games, but that's a significant price hike. I don't think I feel super confident about using him at that sort of a price. While Aldridge at 8,400, I get the feeling that this could be a lopsided encounter. Either way, the Spurs could smash the Sixers or the Spurs could have no one playing and get smashed themselves, and Aldridge ends up playing 20 first half minutes and that's it. So really tough to rely upon him. While Bertans is another minimum salary GPP punt guy you can look at. At center, Rishaun Holmes at 4,100. He had 25 in the last game that he played, which was with Embiid out. So you feel pretty good about him returning base value, so cash value, and he's got that 35, even 40 point upside. So you love using him. Him and Amir can both return value at the same time. They could both be 25-point guys, which at their salary is totally fine. As for Laverne, minimum salary guy, if Pau is out, I'm ready to go in on him as a cash guy. Look, he's not going to be a sensational player, but he can put up 25 or 26. But I would much rather have the Holmes-Johnson combo than putting in Big Joffrey. On DraftKings, Aldridge at 7,600 looks really nice, but of course we don't know what he's going to be in terms of minutes, so he's going to be more of a tournament sort of a guy. And then you got Holmes, who's much more expensive, 4,800, so it does take away some of the cash value there for him. And Amir at 41, not quite as exciting to have Amir at those elevated prices, Amir and Holmesy. So I'd still consider Holmes, but I'd lean them more towards tournament, where Amir at that price, not all that good. DeJounte Murray, also too expensive, 4,700. It might sound appealing if Parker's out, and it could be, but I don't trust the floor at that sort of a salary. It is really tough. Dario Saric at 68 is pretty expensive there too, but he'd be worth a squeeze given the scoring system on DraftKings. That can work out. While Covington at 5,700 is much more appealing on DraftKings, and Redick at 54 also has some value. All right, let's move us on to the next game we're going to take a look at. Oh, where are we? We've got the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Brooklyn Nets. We've got the Wolves favored by 6.5, and the total is 214. Joel Embiid is going to play in this game. Now, he's going to play limited minutes. Kenny Atkinson's been pretty straightforward in that. We're going to play him in short bursts. He has to earn his minutes, so he's not going to come out and play 25, so don't look into that. Caris LeVert is doubtful. Damari Carroll is questionable. Obviously, with LeVert unlikely to play, you're going to have more minutes, I think, to Spencer Dinwiddie. You could have Isaiah Whitehead or Milton Doyle come in as that backup point guard. And Jumpin' Joe Harris could also get some extra playing time as an offensive threat. Not really too much of a ball handler, but he can do it a little bit. At point guard, Tyus Jones at 6,400. Love Jones. That's too expensive. Great matchup for him, but there's no way I want to rely upon him in cash, considering just how much usage is going to flow through those other guys. Whereas Dinwiddie at 6,500 hasn't been nowhere near that level lately. But given the situation with LeVert out, I think he has to push over 30 minutes. And therefore, he's a chance to get to those 30, 35, 40-point ceilings. So it's a good spot to use Dinwiddie. Milton Doyle, Aaron Brooks, both minimum guys. Probably not. At shooting guard, Sauce Castillo, minimum salary, another guy who should benefit from LeVert being out. He can handle the ball. Maybe they don't give Whitehead minutes. Maybe they don't give Harris that extra run. Maybe it's Castillo. But for that big game that he had the other day, he's averaging 9 points in his last five games and 14 minutes. This is a different scenario because, of course, LeVert's not going to play, so we're going to get some extra playing time for Stauskas, but he's more of a tournament guy than anything. Well, Wigo at 5,800 really repaid that in the last game, 4,700. I'd be all about using him in tournaments, but not for cash. Jumpin' Joe Harris at 3,600. Again, he's got that 3-point pop-off ability, 35-point upside. He is a tournament guy, but not really for cash. Unless we hear Damari's out, then that really opens up minutes on the wing, and then he'd be really tough to go past in cash if Carroll is out. Jim Butler's at 9,500. He crushes the Nets when he's a member of the Bulls. He's been crushing it in general with Teague out. You worry a little bit about blowouts if the coach wasn't Tom Thibodeau, but Jim's still going to get his 37, 38 minutes. I think he is totally fine at 9,500. The Blue Swimmers at 5,300. Big game in the last one, so that means we've probably got to wait till February for another big performance from him. At power forward, Taj Gibson, $6,000. The numbers have been okay for him. Not fantastic, but you got to give him a boost because he's playing the Nets, and big men have done quite well against the Nets. So Taj, he has some value, but very limited upside, I believe. While Jeng at 37, strong game in the last one, but he's averaging 15 across his last five. Just not enough consistent playing time. At center, Karl Anthony Towns, 9,800. In on this, big game. Nets centers, it's a great opportunity for Towns if he gets to play against Okafor. I know Okafor's done well against him in the past, actually, but yeah, I'm looking for a 50, a 55-pointer here from Towns and feel pretty good about it. I'm not using Okafor. I'm not using Jarrett Allen. I'm not using Tyler Zeller from the Nets either. Let's flip that to DraftKings now. I like Townsy a lot at 94. I love Jim Butler at 8,600 over on DraftKings. And Rondé, who I didn't mention on FanDuel because he's a little bit too highly priced, he is a strong option as well. Hollis Jefferson on DraftKings, 6,500, while Dinwiddie at 61 is super strong. Love that for Spencer with Karras out. Tyus Jones also comes into play on DraftKings, 5,400. The minutes have been a little bit down in the last game. Foul trouble, blowout also was a concern. I'd look at him more as a tournament guy, rack up, you know, 4 or 5 steals. Maybe he has a decent scoring game, but I wouldn't feel super strong about using him in cash. Wiggins is not anywhere near as good as what he is on FanDuel. And Sauce Castillo at 34 has that tournament upside, as we talked about when looking at the FanDuel side of things. The next game, we've got the Brooklyn Nets and the Miami Heat. The Heat are favored by 3, and the total is a day worst, 196. Jim Johnson is questionable. I'll play the music if he actually comes back. So we don't know if he is going to go. We know Waiters is out. We know Winslow is out. And Avery Bradley is probable for Detroit, while Stan Johnson is doubtful. So that gives some more minutes there to Reggie Bullock and perhaps Lukey Kennard. At point guard, Ish is at 6,200. He's been giving you around 29 to 30 in most of these games as a starter. Suppressed prices, increased prices across the slate makes him okay at 6,200. You feel pretty good about him getting to that number. But he does have a risk with the poor shooting at times. The Iron Shoulder at 6,500 really bounced back in that last game, but I'm not ready to buy into him at that salary. While Tyler Johnson at 6,100, I love what Johnson's been doing. And I think at 6,100, while he's got limited upside, I actually think that he can be a not bad cash play. Avery Bradley comes in at 6,800. That is, why the hell is he that high? No way. Nothing, no chance. Well, Luke Kennard at 38, no way for that as well. And the Duke, Wayne Ellington, is now up to 4,800. That just cuts so much of the cream off the value for GPPs. Don't want to use him for cash, and I don't want to use him for tournaments there. Reggie Bullock at 4,800. If you believe that Reggie Bullock is going to be a 65% shooter, then maybe he can maintain value at 4,800. I have my doubts. So that would probably lead me to fade him in this situation just because of the salary where he is on FanDuel. While Joshy Richardson at 6,400, giving you almost 32 a night over the last five, you know, 31.9. So he's right there. I think he's got a pretty safe floor and he's got a 50-point upside. So I think that he can be a cash guy and a tournament player. At power forward, Johnson at 63, no. Olynyk at 67, just too high given the uncertainty with Johnson back as well. And Toby Harris at 68, just none of those power forwards really scream out to me as being good options on the FanDuel side of things. At center, Hassan Whiteside at 8,300. They bumped his salary quite a bit. He was down at 7,500 for the last game, and he came out and dropped 31 in 29 minutes. So I would expect 29 to 30 minutes at least here for Hassan. He has done okay against Drummond in the past, but I'm not sure he's an $8,300 guy. But it is a decent enough matchup for Hassan. And he does have that 50 to 60 point upside, but I don't feel super strong. Well, Drummond is now a $10,000 guy, and that's because he's been killing it. He's averaging 47 in his last five, 53 in his last three, and he is a guy who's done fairly well against Whiteside in the past. That's a big chunk to throw onto Andre Drummond, and I wouldn't feel great about it, but I think he is absolutely a tournament play given how well he has gone this season. But I don't feel like he's a guy that I want to lock into a cash lineup or anything along those lines. Let's flick that across to DraftKings. I love Whiteside. This is probably the pick of the day on DraftKings. 6,600 for Whiteside. I could not love that enough. That is the absolute cash play of the day, I believe, on DraftKings. I love it. Drummond at 9,100 is absolutely in play on DraftKings, but I would prefer Whiteside, given I can save myself $2,500. Drummond's likely to put up more numbers, but not guaranteed to, and you can save $2,500. So I love both of those guys, but much, much prefer Whiteside on this one. Ish is at 5,900, so a little bit less exciting than what he is on FanDuel, but there's still something there for your cash. Tyler Johnson at 56, I think, is a strong cash play. Well, Joshy Richardson at 63, probably a little bit too high. Now, Avery Bradley, this is a much more reasonable price. 4,700, sure. He's been terrible for most of the season.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Yep, mostly shit, but he's been good at sometimes this season. So at 4,700, there is some GPP upside, but I wouldn't really be feeling super strong about Avery Bradley on DraftKings. Let's go on to the next game. It is the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Boston Celtics. No Isaiah Thomas, we know that already. While Semi Ojeleye is questionable for Boston. At point guard, we're going to have Jose Calderon start again, and we're not going to pay him any DFS attention whatsoever. Terry Rozier has been super strong lately, 27-point average over the last five, and still at 4,100. I think he's worth using. He's finding ways to put up numbers. Marcus Morris is still limited, under 20 minutes per game. I think that if Ojeleye is out as well, give some extra minutes there to Rozier, because then Marcus Smart pushes up to the three a little bit more Tatum and Brown at the three and four also. So that gives Rozier more playing time. If Shemi is in, it'll take a little bit away from Tez, but at 4,100, I do think that for cash and for tournaments, he is absolutely worth a look. Irving's at 9,000. He had 49 in that first game against the Cavs. How long are your revenge games going to go for? I don't know. Look, he's got upside for 55 or 60, clearly. I think at 9,000, he's probably a little bit too high to use for cash play, though. At shooting guard, Smart's at 59, no interest. Wade at 49, back-to-back for Dwayne. I guess there's a chance he sits. I'm not feeling really much for him there. While the plumber, J.R. Smith at 4,000, he's just putrid pretty much at this point. I don't even know has he even got 40-point upside anymore? Probably not. Small forwards, Jaylen, 5,600 for Jaylen, has struggled, understandably, with LeBron in the past. 5,600, I think it's a good price. I think it's a fine price for cash, and get your 26 or 27 and get 40-point upside. I think it's fine for cash with some tournament upside there. Well, LeBron
James.
11,500 for LeBron. I'm in on that. I think that he's going to be playing his decent minutes. We're talking about a bloke who's had a 93-point game this season, so the upside's there. That's one of the high-priced guys I would want on this slate, much more than, say, a Yanni Adetokounmpo, who has been struggling to get the numbers that are commensurate with his salary. At power forward, Marcus Morris, no. Jason Tatum at 5,700. Well, at this point, we've got him and Jaylen at the same sort of salary. I can totally get behind using either of them. I think Tatum at 5,700 is absolutely a cash guy with tournament upside. If I had to pick one, it'd probably be Jaylen. But they're pretty bloody close, mainly because Jaylen's going to go against that Cavs backcourt and Tatum's going to be pushing more into the frontcourt, which is a slightly tougher defensive situation. Jay Crowder had a big game today. He's at 4,300, 32 points in that one. Not bad. I don't really feel super confident about it happening again, but if you're a revenge game guy, of course, he is going back to Boston here, so maybe there is something to see there, but I'm not super interested in that. Vanilla Tice, no. At center, Al Horford, 7,500. No. Kevin Love at 7,900. Well, no Isaiah, so maybe he gets some more touches and some more minutes. I think that Love at 79 is a brilliant GPP guy. I also think he's not far off being a cash guy, but he's not quite there. And we're not looking at Bainesy or Tristan Thompson, really, with any level We're not looking at him. That's enough. On DraftKings, I don't really like too much about this game on DraftKings. Marcus Smart would probably be one of the better options at 5,000, but he's a little bit flaky with his floor, so nothing super exciting with him. Jeff Green at 38.
My name is Jeff.
He's had some good games lately, averaging 24.5 over his last three, but again, there's no solidity of his role on this team. You could look at Crowder at 39, which I think is a strong GPP play. Kyrie at 85, LeBron at 11.3. They're both absolutely fine for cash, but they don't stand out to me and go, I absolutely must use them. Jaylen at 53 and Tatum at 57. I like Jaylen more than Tatum, given the price discrepancy between those two. I think those two guys are just constantly going to be lumped together, and I'm obviously to blame for that. Well, not in general, but I'm blamed for my own lumping of them together. The Pacers and the Bucks. The Bucks are favored by 8. The total is 209.5 points here. No injuries to be concerned about, apart from the fact we know that Victor Oladipo is out already. Daz Collison at 61, that gives him a real boost. You could see in the last game that wasn't the case because he had 8 points as they got annihilated, but I think that he is a strong cash play here against the Bucks, despite the Bucks being decently good in terms of point guard play. So I think that he's fine at 6,100 with Oladipo out. Corey Joseph at 46, just not an exciting fantasy player. Well, Eric Bledsoe at 71, let's go with that. He has been crushing it, averaging 37 over the last 5. Love Bled here. At shooting guard, Chrissy Middleton's at 7,300. I like what Mid's doing, and he's been consistent, just not consistently high enough. So that's probably a level of fade. Brogo at 48, I cannot put any sort of trust in what he is going to do in terms of playing time, nor with Tone Snell. At small forward, Yanni's at 11,300. His highest score in his last 5? 47. Nowhere near enough. If I'm spending 11,300, I'm spending it on LeBron. Look, you can always put Adetokounmpo into a tournament. It's a pretty good, I don't know who they're going to have really to stop him or slow him down, but the numbers just haven't been coming from Adetokounmpo recently, or not enough to justify that sort of a salary. So he is a fade, definitely a cash fade. Lance at 6,200. I think I feel pretty good about Lance getting the minutes back unless they get annihilated like the last game, which is a risk, but I feel okay about him. Boyan, no. At power forward, Thaddeus at 5,600 hasn't been anywhere really near that level, so a tough matchup also. A fade. Sabonis at 56. If Miles Turner struggles again, you could see something out of Sabonis. So I'd look at him as a tournament guy, and you're anchoring your ship to the fact that Turner won't play as much. The Muppet at 5,800 is too high for Johnny Henson. McCurr, 37, big game in the last one. Don't buy into it. Well, Miles Turner at 7,300. No one's going to be on Miles Turner, so he could make an interesting GPP pivot. We've seen centers go big against the Bucks numerous times. That has eased off a bit lately, but Turner's got that ability. But I don't feel really good at all about using him in cash, but I do like him as a tournament guy. Given all those factors I just mentioned on DraftKings, yeah, Corey Joseph at 4,000, I think he's fine for cash given the scoring at DraftKings. Solid 20-point per game guy, which is fine at that price, but limited upside. Well, Sabonis at 51, that same GPP upside. I think Lance and Daz are too highly priced. I think Eric Bledsoe is a bit highly priced, but I do like Miles at 6,900. And Adetokounmpo is definitely more in play on DraftKings at 10,600, but his highest score in that format over his last 5 has been 50, so still not quite there. but definitely a much better look on DraftKings than what he is on FanDuel. Let's go now onto the next game. The Toronto Raptors and the Chicago Bulls. The Raptors are favored by 5. The total is 215.5. Nikola Mirotic is questionable with that rib issue that allegedly kept him out of the stretch run against the Blazers that they ended up choking away and losing. I love Kyle Lowry here. 7,900. You feel like you're 35 floor, 50 point upside. Really, really think he's a strong cash play on FanDuel. And the Bulls, Chrissy Dunn's at 8,000. Give me Lowry. Yeah, Lowry is priced cheaper. He is more consistent overall producer. His numbers over the last 5 games, they're identical. You get him cheaper, more consistency, more reliability. Much better matchup for Lowry going up against the Bulls, who have yielded a lot of points to point guards. Against the Raptors, it's a much tougher goal of it. So, yeah, I take Lowry over Dunn there pretty comfortably. DeLon's at 4,200. He's been getting you 22 to 23 a night, which is all right at 4,200. Limited upside. And it's a good matchup for him, so I can see him being an okay cash guy, but not super. Shooting guard, Justin Holiday, tournaments. DeMar, 9,000. He had 74 in that last game where he had 52 real-life points. He's been putting up some really impressive numbers, but that's a big, big price for DeRozan, and that probably leads me to fade him in cash. I could consider him as a tournament guy, but I don't feel good about it. At small forward, Nwaba at 3,900. No. The Hammer, Denzel Valentine, 44. He's an upside tournament guy for sure. He's got 35, 40 point upside. I wouldn't feel great about it happening, but he is a tournament sort of a guy. Miles and the Jedi, not real anything to see with those guys. At power forward, Markkanen's at 5,400. If Mirotic is out, I'm all about Lowry here. But even irrespective of that, he's averaging 31 over the last 3. So at 5,400, I think that Markkanen can be a decent cash play. Punch Bob's at 4,500. If Mirotic is out, I'm in on Portis here. If Mirotic is in, that is a fade. And as for Nick, he is at 6,800. Somehow putting up numbers just consistently. 35 average over the last 5. 35 in just 19 minutes in the last game. But I don't feel really good about a guy who's allegedly injured at 6,800 in a limited bench role. It could be 26. It could be 22 minutes. I don't feel good about him at that price. At center, Poeltl, Valanciunas, Robin Lopez. I don't think any of those guys are really worth looking at, except I would put Valanciunas, who's done very, very well against the Bulls in the past, I would consider him a 30 to 35 point upside GPP sort of a guy. He averages 31 points in 26 minutes in the last 3 meetings against the Bulls. He does have a history of wreaking havoc against Robin and the Chicago team, so that's something to pay attention to. Whether Casey allows that to happen is another matter. On DraftKings, a lot more value. 6,900 for Dunn is a brilliant cash play, as is Lowry at 65, and even DeRozan at 83 has some appeal. While Justin Holiday at 5,000, I feel good about him at cash at 5,000. Even though, look, his chucking tendencies have dropped, his minutes are fine at 5,000. I love that. Mirotic at 65, the same concerns. Markkanen at 57, nowhere near as much of a bargain as what he is over on FanDuel. And Valanciunas the same, 4,900. I mean, the same as FanDuel. Has got that upside, has done really well against Chicago in the past. All right, the next game we're going to take a look at, the Golden State Warriors and the Dallas Mavericks. This is a tough one for DFS because there's so much in terms of injury news. Omri Caspi is probable for Golden State. And then you've got Draymond questionable, Iguodala questionable, and Zaza Pachulia questionable. Of course, if one of Draymond and Zaza are out, and I imagine one of them will be considering they play against the Rockets on Thursday, then Jordan Bell becomes your guy. If Caspi plays and Draymond and Iguodala are both out, then I think there is absolutely some value in getting Caspi in there as well. If Iguodala, you can have all three of those out, you're going to have big minutes for Bell and Caspi, and even a guy like Pat McCaw or Uncle P, Nick Young. So there's a lot of value that could open up in this one. At point guard, we've got Steph. Of course, he is at 9,800, which is very expensive. The blowout risk, I think, limits your ability to use him in cash, but he can comfortably go out there and drop a 50 in 29 minutes. But he's more of a tournament guy here. Well, Dennis Smith at 55, I really like his upside here. I think he's a 35-pointer, potentially. I don't feel confident in cash, but I feel like the way he's been playing, he took it to Russell Westbrook in that last game the Mavs won late, and he had a triple-double the game before. I'm in on Smith. JJ Barea at 56 feels like a decently strong cash guy with, I guess, a level of upside, but not super great. At shooting guard, Devin Harris, Wes Matthews, Klay Thompson. I have zero interest in any of those guys. At small forward, Durant's at 10-5, probably a little bit high for Kevin. There are other ways to spend that money, so I think he's a fade here. The pencil Harrison Barnes is at 6,300. He averages 24 points the last three times he's taken on his former team, and his upside is limited anyway. I don't think this is a great spot going up against Durant. As for Caspi, 3,800 again. If you have two of those guys out, two of Draymond, Iggy, and Zaza out, then Omri is going to have a role, and he is going to be an absolute, you know, GPP guy to look at because he does have 30-point upside, and that could be really good at 3,800. Power forwards, Maxi Kleber. Minimum salary, Maxi. He can match up against Durant. I think he is a tournament guy here, but even at minimum salary, I think he gets some extra minutes here against the Warriors and can be because he can switch, and that's something you do need against the Warriors. At minimum salary, I'd feel all right about using him in cash. I feel like he's due for a big game. He's had a couple of stinkers recently, and that's sort of the way his season's gone. Jordy Bell's at 5,200. One of those guys out, you look at him. Two of them out, I think you bang him in for cash. And I'd be stunned if you got under 25 points or under 25 minutes if both Draymond and Zaza were out. So if we hear that news early, then we're smashing Jordy. Dirk's at 5,500, could be in some real trouble against the Warriors defensively, and maybe they limit him, but he's been putting up some strong numbers. I just don't think it's a favorable situation. Well, Dave West and Dwighty Powell, two other minimum or close to minimum salary guys that I don't think we need to pay too much attention to. Well, Zaza and Salah are the two centers. Nothing for us to get too interested in. On DraftKings for tournaments, of course, it's Bell at 46, and we lock him in cash if those other guys are out. And then there's some real strong cash plays. 8,900 for Steph is great. 97 for Durant is also great. I'd prefer Steph over Durant. And I love JJ Barea on DraftKings at 5,100. I think the pencil's too high. Klay Thompson's too high. Not interested in Draymond. Well, Dennis Smith, probably a little bit, definitely take him away from cash on DraftKings, but at 5,600, there is, you know, he's got 50-point upside, so that does put him into a tournament-type situation, but that salary is just a little bit too high for me to be overly excited about him. The next game we'll take a look at, the New Orleans Pelicans, the Utah Jazz, we've got the Jazz Bowl here. Hal Neto is questionable. He's got a bone bruise now to go along with that concussion that's kept him out. At point guard, Rajon Rondo at 6,300. Nope. I just don't know what we're going to get from him on a nightly basis, so that's a no from me. Ravishing Rick Rubio, 5,300. 4,400 in the last game for Rick, but that was against the Cavs. I wouldn't be overly confident in him getting to 30. And maybe a tournament, maybe, but not really. At shooting guard, Rocket Rodney Hood, 5,600, has been quite poor recently, but he's got that 35-point upside, so he is a tournament guy. While the Don Mitchell, 7,800, 51 points in that game against the Cavs. Last time he took on the Pelicans, he had 49. I think you can absolutely look at him as a GPP guy, but there is an element of risk of using a rookie guard at that sort of a salary. Over the last five games, he's had a 21-pointer in there, which would really sink your lineups at that sort of a cost. So he's more of a tournament guy than a cash guy. Jrue Holiday at 6,900. The numbers have dropped off for him a little bit. It's a slower-paced game, so that's probably a fade for him. Tarbo up to 4,700 because he's been starting. He's played over 30 minutes in the last two games. If we hear that Tarbo is starting, I think you feel pretty good about him getting to 25 points. While Jingle and Joe at 53, the numbers have been down, and I'd be fading. Etuan Moore, Joe Johnson. Joe Johnson's been terrible this season, by the way. Dante Cunningham and Darius Miller, the other small forwards, no interest. Power forward, Tone Davis, 10,900 for Tone. I love this for him. No Rudy Gobert to worry about. He'd average 52 anyway in the last three against the Jazz with Gobert around. I think he's fine at 10-9. Really like him for cash and tournaments. Favors at 6,400, not against his front court. Sorry, Dez. We'll be looking in a different direction. At center, it's Boog. It's 12,000 for Boog. So that probably takes him out of cash play for me. But I still think, I know he can get 60 pretty comfortably. He can get 70 or 80. So that always puts him into the tournament calculations. While Epe Udo, probably not, mate. On DraftKings, Boog's at 10-5. Tone Davis is at 9-9. They are stupid prices, especially Davis at 9,900. I absolutely love that. Davis is averaging 49 over his last five and 55 over his last three. That's a stupid, stupid value price. Well, Tarbo at 39. That, along with I completely forgot what that other great price was before for DraftKings. I've completely blanked on that one. But at 3,900, Tarbo is one of the better options out there and enables you to maybe then run a front court of Boog and Tone together because they can put up numbers at the same time. We are getting to the end of this absolute monster of a podcast. Apologies for the length of this show. I always think to myself, I want to make today a shorter one, yeah, get you guys through it quicker. But I just, I can't stop the shit rambling that happens. Phoenix at Denver. The Nuggets are favored by 11. The total is 218. Dr. Michael Malone, his New Year's resolution is to get more minutes to his bench. Mate, you're the one controlling it, so just do it. Pretty simple, but that could have an impact on guys like Gaz Harris, the Blue Arrow, Nikola Jokic, who've been playing just huge, huge minutes. So maybe we see some Malik Beasley, maybe we see some Wancho, maybe we see more minutes to Torrey Craig, as Malone had been running a real tight rotation. And this has got the ingredients of a real blowout, back-to-back, on the road, in altitude for the Sun. So real blowout potential here, which is a concern. We don't expect Tyson Chandler to play. It is a back-to-back, and he's had a history of sitting out all back-to-backs with Greggy Monroe, likely to start.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
Well, maybe Greg will run in this one. We can only hope. At point guard, 7,300 for the Blue Arrow. That is too high. Considering Malone can dick him around, he's already making noise about wanting to use his bench more. Maybe he brings Manny Moutier back in. Maybe this game's over by the start of the fourth quarter. That is too expensive for the Blue Arrow. He's been killing it. It's too expensive. Tyler Ulis at 4,000. Okay numbers from him recently, but I have zero confidence. Same with the Cannonball at 4,100. At shooting guard, Farton Will Barton, 6,600. You feel like he's almost a 30-point lock, and that's not bad for cash. There is a little bit of tournament upside there, but I think he's probably a fade in this situation, while Gaz Harris at 6,700.
Nice, Gary!
Like what he's been doing, I don't really see the value in that there. Devin Booker at 78, bang, it's in, lock it in, let's go. Devin Booker, cash, 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 and tournaments as well. He is just putting up numbers on a real consistent basis. At small forward, Baby Neck Wilson Chandler, 5,100, had been putting up some good numbers prior to this. This has been shit recently, but it's a really, really good matchup for Wilson. I don't want to overuse this sound drop, but I want to do it again.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
That's pretty much been Wilson Chandler's season. I still want to overuse it. I want to keep it special, but it's going to get dropped. 5,100 for him. I think it's fine in a good matchup here. I think he's actually worth a look in cash options. TJ Warren at 7,500. Feel like it's $500 too high. So there is a 50-point upside there, 60-point upside for TJ. But I don't think that it's really at 7,500. When you can spend 300 more on Devin Booker, you spend 300 more on Devin Booker every day of the week. Joshy Jackson just didn't even play today, so he's really struggling. Trey Lyles at 6,300. We love what Lyles is doing, and it's a brilliant, brilliant matchup for Trey, but that's probably pushing it a little bit for me. I don't dislike it, and I absolutely think you can use it, but it's not moving into my list of great plays for the day. While Marquise Chris up to $5,000 now, continuing putting up good numbers, I'm in. Let's go, Marquise Chris. Cash, bang, tournaments, I'm in, and it's going to make me look silly tomorrow, but I'm in. At center, Mason Plumlee at 5,200. No, thank you. While Greggy's at 5,200. You know, Greg had 30 points in his last game. I think that you can absolutely use Greg Monroe here, assuming that Tyson Chandler's out, which is a fairly strong assumption. So I think that Greg is worth a look. Jokic at 9,900. That's too expensive in a blowout and potential limiting of minutes, as Malone did state that he wanted in and named Jokic. He wanted to limit his playing time a little bit. So that is something for us to pay attention to. On DraftKings, Blue Arrow at 6,700, much more sexy price, but more of a tournament just because of those reasons I mentioned earlier. While Greggy at 4,500, I've got him listed as a tournament guy, but I'm thinking about it now. I think at 45, you could almost use that for cash. He plays, he puts up numbers almost every single time that he's out there. I guess the concern is that what if Chandler does play? I don't think that's a risk. Baby Necks at 47, so I think that's pretty good. While Trey Lyles, this is a great spot for Lyles, a real strong option, great opponent. 5,100 for Trey. I think that's cash. I think it's tournaments. I really like it. Marquise Chris at 46 is also super strong. On DraftKings, we're almost there. This is the last game of the night. It's the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Los Angeles Lakers. We've got Kyle Kuzma, Lonzo Ball, and Brook Lopez all questionable. I would say Lopez and Ball will be out, and Kuzma, who knows at this point. Obviously, if Lopez and Kuzma are both out, you're going to see more minutes for Julius Randle, more minutes for Larry Nance, more minutes for Corey Brewer, and maybe you get some Ivica Zubats, but probably you end up with more Andy Bogut. If Ball is out, Tyler Ennis becomes a player who started the last two games, one game good, one game not so good. So he'd be a GPP type of guy. While you could also look at Josh the Hitman Hart. We do have to remember, though, with the hitman, that Kentavious Caldwell-Pope will be back in action because it is back in California, and he will be able to jump on the court with his ankle bracelet on. At point guard, Lonzo's at 7,700. I love what Lonzo is doing before the injury. That's too high for a guy that we don't know is going to play, so no. Russ at 12,300. I don't think you can use that in cash. I'd much rather take your 11-5 on LeBron or spread it out amongst some of the other games that are there. Now, Russ has been great, averaging 63 across the last five, but that is a real risk at that price to find just anyone else that can fit in. It's not saying that we don't think that Russ can get to 60, because he absolutely can. Is that can you find enough other guys at cheaper prices to fit in around him? And that might be the challenge on FanDuel. So probably more of a tournament sort of a guy. Andre Robertson is out for the Thunder, so that's going to open up something for Joshy Huestis, maybe Alex Abrines as well, and Fat Face Ray Felton, who played 23 minutes in that last game at 3,800. He could get you 2021 and maybe be a cash guy. Caldwell Pope's at 6,100. No interest there at all. Hart, 4,200 for the Hitman. With KCP back, it's a little bit tougher to use him. Abrines and Ferguson, no interest. At small forward, Brando Ingram has struggled. 6,600 for Ingram. Paul George defense could be a real concern on him. If I'm going to use him, it's going to be tournaments, but I don't feel good about it. Whereas Georgie at 8,400, playing in front of potentially his former or his future home crowd. I think he's a GPP sort of a guy here. 8,400 is probably a little bit high for cash for Georgie. At power forward, the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, is now down to 6,100 because his performances have dropped off. He's averaging just 28 over the last five and put up 7 in his last game, but he has absolutely got 50-point upside. So we can look at him as a tournament guy. It's just not a very good matchup given the way the Thunder's defense has been playing. Melo's at 6,200. I'd rather take the future MVP at 6,100 rather than Melo at 62. And at center, Lopez's minimum salary, 3,500. If we hear Brooke Lopez is going, I would absolutely put him into my GPP. People minimum salary. Now he hasn't been good. He's averaging 20 points over the last five, but if I get 20 points at minimum salary, that's fine. And he can get 25, he can get 30, he can get 50. It's probably unlikely, but that is huge GPP upside. Steve-O Adams, 6,700, has been a little bit quiet lately. If he has to go up against Julius Randle because Lopez is out, then I think at 6,700, you would be pretty interested in him in a GPP, whereas Randle at 6,900, Lopez out, Randle GPP, Lopez in, pretty tough. But that could really open up for Julius. If Kuzma and Lopez are out, then that's a lot of minutes for him and for Larry Nance, and both of them would be very interesting GPP type of options. On DraftKings, not a lot that I love in this one. If Lonzo plays, I think at 6,700, it's a decent spot. Westbrook's at 11.7, so he's way more in play in cash on DraftKings than what he was over on FanDuel. You got a little bit of value for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope as a GPP guy at 51, and Julius Randle at 57 is interesting. And if we have Lopez and Kuzma out, or even just one of them, I think 5,700 would then transform Randle into being a cash guy. Let's now wrap this up. If you're still with me on Yahoo, let's go through some options there. For GPPs, it's Eric Gordon, Lance Stevenson, Ish Smith, Mason Plumlee, the Blue Swimmer, Wes Matthews, the Duke Wayne Ellington, Gerald Green, Jay Crowder, Terry Rozier. And for cash games, we've got Frankie Ntilikina, probably lean more GPP actually for him, D'Lon, Jakob Poeltl, Amir Johnson, Corey Joseph, TJ McConnell, Reggie Bullock, Rashawn Holmes, Tarbo, JJ Barea, Bismack, Trey Lyles, Tyus Jones, Johnny Wall, and Chrissy Paul. On Moneyball for tournaments, Yanni, Johnny Wall, the Blue Arrow, Wigo, Jordy Bell, who can be converted to cash if those situations arise, as we talked about earlier, and Gerald Green. And for cash, it's Amir Johnson, Rashawn Holmes, Kyle Anderson, Tarbo, Trev Ariza, Dario Saric, Farton, Will Barton, Eric Bledsoe, Eric Gordon, Kyle Lowry, DeMar Whiteside, Jim Towns, Jim Butler that is, Tone Davis, Chris Paul, and Boog Cousins. And on Draft Stars for tournaments, Adetokounmpo, Townsie, Wall, Whiteside, Miles Turner, the Blue Arrow, Bob Cove, Kelly Olynyk, Spencer Dinwiddie, Tyus Jones, Rashawn Holmes, PJ Tucker, Jay Crowder, Sauce Castillo. And for cash, we've got Poeltl, we've got Amir Johnson, Corey Joseph, Reggie Bullock, Tarbo, Baby Neck, Barea, Ariza, Lyles, Eric Gordon, Steph Curry, Chris Paul, and DeMarcus Cousins. Don't forget, follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball and follow the Locked On Podcast Network at @LockedOnNBAnet on Twitter and on Facebook. And if you are listening to this on Apple Podcasts and you're still somehow you still listen to this, go and give a 5-star review. It's a great way of supporting the show. You can also find us on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify, and of course on YouTube, where you can get your suggestion in for the player spotlight for Thursday's show. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Michael Beasley.